Welcome to episode 12 of the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and on this episode, I'm joined by Mitchie Curran of Mitchie's Munchies, and we've got special call-in messages from Stan Farrell of Composimold and Sharon Spradley of Curiosity Cakes. So whether you've just sat down to work on a big project, are frantically up all night trying to get something done on time, or mopping up airbrush overspray from all over your kitchen, let's get this show started to entertain and inspire you as you get your hard work done. Welcome to the episode, everyone, and I'm afraid I have to start with a little bit of an apology for a technical glitch. Last night, I was talking to Mitchie, who you're about to hear, and I'd started recording, as I always do, on my microphone, and the little red light was on, and then we did the intro, you know, this is Mitchie, and yay, and how are you, and ha ha ha, and then, oh, the light was off. Oh, I'm really sorry, let's restart. And she was very gracious about it. Okay, so we redid it, and it's like, yay, hello, how are you? Slightly less enthusiastic than the first time, but we started doing it. And then the red light went off again, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. So I rebooted the microphone, and then I was able to record the full thing. Now, I had thought that the introduction files at least still saved on the card, but it turns out they didn't. The full interview saved, but the introduction didn't, so now I'm going to re-record the introduction for you right now without Mitchie, because it's almost noon here in England, which means it's 2 o'clock in the morning for Mitchie, so I am not going to get her back on just to redo the intro. So I am going to do an intro, and then I'm just going to paste in the interview, and we're all going to pretend that I'm a real professional at this. Joining me now, sort of back in time, TARDIS style, is Mitchie Curran from Mitchie's Munchies in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah, it's recording now. I don't know why it keeps going. I will let you know if it goes off again. I have no idea what
maybe,
I do.
Maybe it's me because, you know, like sometimes I get so excited that I just sound like a dolphin and maybe it can't, you know, it's like,
if that just shot the level up, that's for sure. But I can edit that down. I can leave that scream in and just tap down that peak. But no,
now your microphone.
Yeah, I don't know. My microphone's being weird. But, yeah, because I think everyone should have theme music. I don't know if you know that some of the regular people on this show now have theme music. Well, or not necessarily regular people on the show. People who get mentioned too often on this show have cues. Mm-hmm. Kyla has a sound cue about being the cake nexus.
Cake nexus!
And Mike McCary, I have a long one for Mike McCary that's about him being the cake god.
Mike McCary, he's the cake god.
But he gets mentioned so often, and clearly has just been mentioned again, that I often just put like a choral sound, like, you're like, oh, I obviously have to edit into this.
I have a funny story about Mike McCary at not this last cake camp here in Vegas, but the previous. He was taking roll call, and he gets to me and goes, what are you doing in here? I was like, I felt my cheeks go pink, and I'm like, because I'm taking a class with you? And he's like, you don't need this class. And I was like, my little heart was just like, boom, 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 coming out of my chest. I'm like, because I was embarrassed, shy, and like honored that he would say anything like that. But I'm like, dude, I just want to learn.
I just want to bask in your glory.
Like, oh. That was crazy. I'm like, oh my God, my belly is pitting right now thinking about it. I'm like, ah.
I know that feeling because I told him that because that happened once early on, like the first time I met him, it was at the Austin show. That's when I had done this really big cake. And then all I cared about like at this show was that I was like, because I never go to demos or anything because I'm always volunteering. But I got a friend to cover the kids table because that was back when I used to run the kids table. And I got a friend to cover that so I could go to a Mike McCary demo. And then in the middle of the demo, he starts talking about my cake. And I was all like, rah, rah, rah. And so I have since told him that. And because he's awesome, but also slightly evil. Now, if he sees me in any audience, if he knows I'm there, he will find an excuse to mention me because he knows that like my imposter syndrome goes off and I can't, and I'm all like, blah, blah. Like, so he did it at NEC last year. He mentioned me in the middle of his demo at Cake International last year.
No way. That's
I know.
So cool.
It was cool, but it was also like, oh my God, I can't, I'm like, Kelly, I can't handle this.
I know.
And I knew he was about to do it because he looked right at me and grinned and then did it.
You know what's really funny? Another thing about like being an arcade community, I love meeting everybody. So like when I was in hobby phase, you know, over 10 years ago and just starting to go to cake shows and, you know, really explore my options out there, I started meeting other people, you know, like James Trussell and Marina Sousa. And like, you know, I was fangirling like pretty hard. So now here we are 10 years later and my mom sends me a text. She goes, oh my God, Marina Sousa just tagged you on a post on Facebook. my mom is still fangirl, but I'm like, you know, not as hard. I'm not like, oh my God, I'm going to get a picture with them and I'm not going to know what to say. But my mom is like that now, you know, I'm like, mom, I'm like, it's Marina. She's so cool. And she's like, oh my God, you know, so Marina did me a favor. My mom had, this was a couple of summers ago, she had both her knees replaced. So she was recovering and she really wanted to come to cake camp and meet everybody. And she couldn't make it there because she was recovering. So Marina recorded a little video on my phone and we sent it to my mom, and my mom plays it to this day. She's gaga for Marina. So it's so cute.
That is so sweet. I have met Marina, but I don't think she knows me from anyone. I'm pretty sure she has no idea who I am, or James. They don't
really?
Know who I am. Oh, they don't know who I am. No, no, no. I know they don't. I was shocked recently that there are a couple people that I'm pretty sure Benny Rivera didn't know who I was. I had introduced myself to him. Although when I did, maybe he recognized the name. Part of it is because I go by Marvin on the thing, right? So I don't look like me.
Oh,
so,
right. Yeah.
Avalon didn't know who I was. I went up to Avalon at NEC last year. She had no idea who I was until I mentioned Kyla's name. And then I was just in that amorphous group of friends of Kyla.
Well, you know, a lot of us friend each other on Facebook and have never met one another.
Yeah.
Well, at Cake Fair, the very first Cake Fair, I was like totally stoked. Rosie from Cake Masters had invited me to come to dinner, which was really funny because I called it the order Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix. I knew where you were going. Yeah.
So I called it Order of the Cake Masters. So
it is.
Anyway, Benny and I were friends on Facebook, but we hadn't officially met in person. Like we did a couple of times, you know, but like didn't know each other like on a personal level. I was looking at him and I Susan Trianos was sitting next to me and I'm like, I said, look at Benny. I'm like, what is he doing? You know? And I don't know. We just got into like some silly conversation. And then, Shel Boyd was also sitting with us on that end of the table. And I said, I'm going to send him a message. And they're like, do it, do it. So I sent him a PM that said, why are you so swole? Because he was looking at his phone so intently, you know, like, and he had pursed lips and he's got all that, you know, great muscle in his upper body. So he just looked like he was like, mm. So he looks up and he like gives me this like Cheshire grin and he goes, stop. He goes, you're so funny. But it was cool because like he knew who I was. So I love Benny. I love, oh, there's so many people I love. I don't think there's anybody that I dislike. I don't know. I'm kind of like a puppy out of the gate. You know, I'm like, oh, let me out. You know, and then I get out and I'm like all over you. I'm like, I want to lick your face.
That's probably from, well, no, there are probably some people who'd like that. But we won't name names.
I don't think Casey Lackey would mind if I licked her face.
No, I think especially after you came on last time, I think they were very, very happy that you came on and gushed about the innovative sugar work stuff. So
I can't help it.
I know. I'm the same way. I mean, I have them on for reasons.
I met Chris and Megan in Austin in 2015. Oh my God. I've been like totally crushing on them and their products, you know, ever since. But before that, when they start, you know, when Casey started making little hints that something was about to happen, and I think Lauren Kitchens was involved in that too, you know, that this new product was coming out, I was just like, oh my God, I was all over it. So now I'm like, when I listened to your last interview with them, they revealed some secrets about some stuff coming out. So now I'm just like, sending them private messages. I'm like, hello.
Yep.
Mitchie wants to see. Yeah. Anytime I get one of their products, I make it a huge deal. You know, like Lion King moment. I'm like,
So, oh, yeah.
It's so funny. Years ago on Instagram, I did a little welcome for the mini sugar shapers, and I used a little clip from Lion King. And then I think at SoFlo, Mary Carmen, you know who that is, right? Mary Carmen and Chris Aranda.
I've written immigration documents for Mary Carmen. I know who she is very well.
Oh, well, it was funny. Her and Chris, they sang the Lion King song. No, it was at the New York Cake Show. They sang the Lion King song about sugar, innovative Sugar Works products. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, great minds think alike. I'm like, you can't help but to do stuff like that.
That is so cool. Yeah, I mean, Casey had told me quietly about the sugar structures. A couple of years ago when Casey was there, she told me, like, at the end of the show, we were talking, and she mentioned that we're gonna do, like, a thing where you get, like, little bits of metal that screw together, like, not plastic or anything like this, and you're not going to have to hunt for the black pipe for my craftsy class. And then, of course, it was because it took them so much longer to develop, to get it right, you know, because they care. They care so much about doing a good product. And making sure that it's the food safe aluminum, but that it's also the durability. They gave me some the prototypes at Austin, and I've started playing with them, but then my kids were being a pain, and it's like But so I have some of the sort of mid level prototype ones, and one of my thing now that I've just got this super top secret collab thing for Kyla done. I have to get my kid's birthday out of the way, and I have NEC to deal with, but in there somewhere I have a plan for a very fun use of the sugar structures, because they're pretty awesome.
I know how you feel. I also have a top secret project sitting on one of my workbenches, which I've only been able to do a little bit at a time for the past couple of weeks, because my sad story is that my back is broken. So I'm in physical therapy and traction 3 days a week.
Oh my
and
God.
I was supposed to have back surgery tomorrow, but my insurance wouldn't approve it. They denied it 4 times.
Oh my God.
So I know, I'm telling you, man, this business is wearing down my back, but it's not actually what caused my back to compress. Long story short, your spine is supposed to be in the letter C, and mine's in the letter shape S. It's really bad.
Oh dear.
So I can only sit for 30 minutes or stand for 30 minutes. I'm Goldilocks, you know, and I've got like all these different stools in my studio. So my point is that I get in there and I work for a little bit, and then I've got to get up because my tailbone is zinging. And then, you know, I'll wear the back brace and all this stuff. But my project that's sitting there has that internal structure, and it is awesome. I'm like, this has so much potential in it, you know, and I'm like, but I almost don't want to make any of my client cakes with it because I know I won't get it back. You know, which is okay because you write that in your price, right?
Right.
But I'm like, I don't want to be without it.
Yeah, you don't
and have to wait for it to come, you know, and then wait for a new one to come in.
Yeah.
But it is so cool. And I cannot believe how strong it is, because like you've seen the pieces and you feel it's like, you know, it's that food safe aluminum, and you're like, how can this be so strong?
Yeah, because it's so lightweight. They gave me the 4 boxes, and I threw away, left at Kyla's house, 3 of the boxes in the foam, and I just condensed it all down to fit in my luggage. But condensing all 4 kits into 1 box, you still like rattle it, and you're like, this does not feel like a box full of metal. Like, this is shockingly light. Compared to, you know, I've done PVC structures, and I mean, that's fairly lightweight. But I've also, you know, been to a Mike McCary structure class with a lot of wood and copper in it and stuff, and the big hunk of all thread up the middle, which is super mega strong. But this aluminum stuff is so light compared to, I mean, you almost feel like there's nothing to it, but then it's so strong.
Yeah, I can't, seriously, like, I thought for sure it was going to topple over because my project has a skull on it, which is half the size of a human skull. I always start from the top because otherwise it's going to wind up looking like, you know, the shrunken head that's sitting in the waiting room with Beetlejuice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, I know it's going to topple, and it hasn't. It's still standing strong. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but you know, just to be safe, I did put I have a sandbag on the base. Well, I'm just a nervous Nelly.
Well, I mean, to some extent, even if the structure itself is very solid, and even if your base is wide enough so that it doesn't tip, that doesn't mean that you can't be the dork who walks by or says hello to someone and stick your arms out and knock it over. So, you know, guarding right. against your own, myself personally, I like to guard against my klutziness.
A few years ago, I was babysitting one of my friend's daughters, and so I bring her into the studio with me and put on some cartoons for her, because I want to say this was in 2014. I was working on my Sugar Spooks project, so I was pretty much done with this project, and I was just doing like final details and hand painting and everything, and she got up off the floor as I was going to reach for some, I think I was getting paints or something, and I just heard it come down on the floor. She pulled it off my workbench. Yep, pulled. And I was just shocked. I'm like, dude. And she's like, Ucky. And I'm like, are you telling me that I'm yucky or my project? Because, you know, I need to know. I'm trying to, like, level with this kid. And she just looks at me like, hmm? Jeez. I need to know. But yeah, needless to say, I had to pretty much start over. I had to rebuild the base. It was okay, but the back wall was hand-painted fondant, so I had to redo that.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it sucked. I'm just like, and you know, when her mom picked her up that day, she's like, how was she today? And I'm like, she was a jerk.
They can be. Yes, that's a thing.
Dude, man. I tell my friend, it's my friend Liz, because I know she'll listen to your podcast. I'll be like, Liz, you know our relationship with Ashley. Sometimes she loves me and sometimes she was just like, I'm like, hey, what's going on?
It'll happen. Yeah, I mean, you probably even see me sometimes posting on Facebook. I'm like, you know, I yelled so loud at my kids today that I got a headache. My kids are being jerks. I mean, particularly in this last couple weeks, because Robin just started school on Friday. So now tomorrow she's going to school and she'll be at school all week. Yay, yay, yay. And like all these other parents are going, oh, they're so sad as they drop their kids off for school. And I'm like, I am done. This is great. Yay for me. And they're all like, ah. I'm sorry. I love my children. I do. I mean, I worked really hard to become a mom. I have an IVF baby and I have an adopted baby. I worked hard and I spent a lot of money to become a mother.
So you said you have an IVF baby and an adopted baby? That's so awesome. I only have fur babies.
You get a lot more work done. So, no, I mean, like, I love having kids and I love being a mom and stuff. And part of why I started doing cakes was because I had kids and all that, right? You know, I don't want to pay those prices for a cake. I understand why it's expensive, but I can't afford it. I'm going to learn to make cakes. So, you know, I mean, it's part of why I knit, too, because, you know, I know what a knitted toy should be worth. But, yeah, the thing is, because I have a 7.5-year gap between them, when Peo started going to full-time school, that's when I was doing so much of this volunteer work for the Austin show. And that's when I started doing Bake-A-Wish stuff, because I had time and I had all these things that I could do. And I could do the bigger cake for her and maybe, you know, cake for a friend. And of course, I wasn't charging because I was an idiot and the whole thing. But then we got Robin and it was very instant. We were told, go pick up there's a baby born in a hospital and it's yours. Go get it. So I went from not having a baby. I mean, we knew we were in the adoption queue, but we didn't know, like, are we going to meet a birth mom and wait 6 months? We had no idea. And then it was like, here's your baby. You know, I mean, I love her. I love her very, 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 very much. She's my baby. But I'm really glad she's going to school so I can do some other things. So it's like, everyone go to school. Get out of my house.
Heather Sherman, I love her. She's one of my greatest.
She's
friends.
My cake wife.
But I love when I'm like, how are the girls? And she goes, oh, they're in full on redheaded mode. It cracks me up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel bad. You know, I don't have kids or whatever, but like, I'm like, please throw me your children because I am the world's best babysitter. I've hashtagged it. I'll take your kids. Feel kind of left out when everybody starts posting pictures of their kids, you know, first day of school. So I'll post my Bella, my German Shepherd, wearing a tie.
That's cool. put out a big mat, and I'm going to load the trebuchet, and I'm going to fling my kids over for Mitchie Camp.
I'm ready for them.
Yeah.
It's time for a podcast helpful reminder. Are you working on a competition piece? Are you working on a client cake? When was the last time you checked the rules for your competition entry? When was the last time you read your client contract to make sure that you're spelling that name right? You're working really hard, I know, but every once in a while, you need to pause, go check that you're doing it right, because you're an amazing artist, but we all make mistakes. So right now, if you can pause, go check what you need to do, make sure it fits in the space that it needs to go into, make sure everything's spelled right, and then get back to work, because you're awesome.
I gotta say, it's kind of cool that I'm talking to somebody over the phone.
Yeah, that's totally how I sound.
You don't. You know, surprisingly, but it's probably because you've been all over the place. But me, I tend to pick up accents everywhere I go. Which Rosie from Cake Master, she likes when I do my little English accent. I'm like, oh, Rosie, it's massive.
I could, and that's why I try not to, because I don't want to sound like Dick Van Dyke.
Rebecca Naomi Wilbur from American Cake Decorating. I've talked to her on the phone a few times, and I'm like, I remember one day I was like, where are you from? Because her all different kinds of accents would come through, and I couldn't figure it out. It was so cool, you know, because I think she lives in Virginia, but she's English, right? So like every now and then her English accent comes out, and I'm like gripped to it. I'm like, what is that? I'm like, I like it.
Where I catch Peo and I both hear, because my husband has sort of an Australian accent, but because his parents were New Zealanders before the vowel shift, because that's a thing that happens there, but less now that there's media, because media then reinforces you to keep speaking like what you've just heard, right? But there was a vowel shift in New Zealand in the 80s, Ben, and his parents moved to Australia before that happened. So the New Zealand accent now that clips its vowels, he does not have that. He has the pre-1980s New Zealand accent of his parents, but his siblings are all much more, you know, true blue Aussie. So, but if he speaks with his siblings, he will then start to sound more Aussie. But Americans think he sounds generically British. So Peo has had accent confusion her whole life. I remember when we first started her in school in Austin, her teacher had a real southern drawl and spoke real slow about everything. And it was really nice because she calmed you down. It was perfect for a Montessori teacher in Austin. She just, everything took this long to say.
No.
Peo would do that. She once said to us that she was going to go play on the grass.
I'm going to fly on the ground. Play. That's funny.
And she still does that Texas, that A thing. Like, she'll talk about bears. Peo talks about bears, not bears. Or New Zealander beers. She talks about bears. Like, there's a Y.
Well, I was just going to tell you, my husband is from the New England area. So if he says bear, it sounds like beer.
Yeah. When our New Zealand relatives were visiting us when we were in Las Vegas, they'd been up to BC and then come back, they'd come down Pacific Coast Highway and then, you know, come on over to Las Vegas to stay with us for a couple of days. And they were telling us this story about the beer. And I was like really confused because it wasn't matching. And then I realized the bear was stealing your food. Beer was not stealing your food. That would make no sense. A bear was stealing your food.
Speaking about New England, my husband, there's two things that he says, like, in conversation that are really funny. And it took me a while to understand what they were. But, like, if we're driving and there's someone driving fairly slow in front of us and he's like, come on, you egg timer.
I don't think I've heard that one.
And then, you egg timer. and then there's, adorable. Like, if somebody is showing off or, like, boasting about themselves, he's like, this ham and egger.
I haven't heard either of those.
It's just funny.
Oh
my god!
And I was New England adjacent because I grew up in just outside Toronto. You can tell because I say Toronto, not Toronto. That's how you can tell if someone's from the Toronto area or not, is if they make it sound like it's Trana as opposed to Toronto. Then I went to school in Ottawa. I went to Ottawa. I didn't go to Ottawa because nobody says it like a T unless they're not from there. But, you know, I keep saying I can start sounding Canadian if I want to. I just start dropping my D's and it's a little bit more of a drown out vowel, eh? I mean, I could go right into Canadian. Yeah,
my dad lives in very North Washington state, and he's not that far from the Canadian border. And we've been there a couple of times and met some of his friends that are, gosh, where is that place called? At Tawasin. They're from, like, the islands that are up there in Puget Sound.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, they were telling us, like, some of the things that they say, and, you know, hoot. That's one of the big things. So, I was saying it. I just repeated the word. I'm like, I said, so that's a hoot? And this lady comes in, and she goes, who's a hoot? I'm a hoot. And ever since then, my husband and I, we do that around the house. Like, you know, we're like, that's a hoot. Who's a hoot?
I actually auto-corrected a Canadianism I wanted to use when I said that my in-laws were coming down the Pacific Highway, because I wanted to say, and then they deked over to Las Vegas, because it's a very Canadian thing to say that you deke over somewhere, but Americans frequently don't know what that means. So, like, that's why I was like, and then they came over. That's why I was, like, being awkward there, and then they came over, because I was trying to auto-correct my Canadianism.
Now when I hear anything, I just go to... I go to the Urban Dictionary because it's a lot more fun.
You're not always, you know, children listening, do not go to Urban Dictionary. You will not always get the definition you want.
No, but it's a good time.
It is a good time. Oh, I don't know if you listened to the episode where we had Jackie Kelly on, but speaking of, I keep saying she is a hoot and a half.
I was just going to say, now she's a hoot.
She's a hoot. Yeah, and almost says it like that. See, now we're lapping back around. I try very hard not to get the Scottish accent, because that's what I grew up with. My dad worked to not have his Scottish accent, because he was from Scotland. And he came over first when he was 10, and then they went back, and then he came over again when he was 13. Because my granny apparently couldn't make up her mind.
Uh-huh.
But my Scottish my granny and papa, that's what we called the grandparents on that side. Granny and papa had Scottish accents, and so I grew up with that. That's part of why, again, the Mike Myers thing, like when he does that Scottish stuff, and he grew up right near me, and if I listen to Mike Myers, I suddenly get the Canadian accent back, or whatever accent he's doing.
He'd pants now.
That's right. So I married an axe worker.
I'm pretty good at mimicking other accents, but for some reason, when I try to do Australian or something like that, I wind up yelling, and it doesn't even sound Australian.
It is a running joke in this household that my husband cannot do an American accent without shouting, because that is how he perceives Americans to be all the time.
We are loud. Well, Sharon Spradley and I, this is after Cake Fair, she went to Universal, well, I call it Harry Potter World. We went to Harry Potter World, and it's a funny story, and every time I try to repeat it, I try to get her accent in there, but I can't do it without yelling. It's just funny. If you've ever gone to Universal Studios in Florida, their parking system is the craziest thing I've ever seen. I actually think that what happens is that the floors actually move, and you don't know. So
it's part of the
experience. Her car, and I'm like, okay, we split up, you know, we totally Scooby-Dooed it, you know, we're like, we're split up, you know, and we'll go find it, right? So I found it, and I call her, I'm like, I found your car, blah, 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 it's on the sun, and she goes, ah, Mitchie, how do you know it's my car? And I'm like, this has to be your car. Like, I don't think anybody else has this car. And she goes, all right, Mitchie, don't move, I'll be right there. That's not actually how she sounds. It's just how my accent, my Sharon Spradley accent comes out.
Try and get her to
come. It was her car.
You need to tell her after this, go poke her on Facebook and say that you're on this, and you need her to do a call in to say something so we can compare.
That was a really fun day. She's like, you know, we were just beat to heck from Cake Fair, like, because we were everywhere. She did the fashion show. I was covering social media for Icing Images and performing demos. I mean, like, you know, shows take a lot out of you. You know that from being in Austin. So, like, your legs, your feet, everything's worn out. And she's just like, ah, Mitchie, I don't want to go to Harry Potter World. And I'm like, please. I'm like, nobody else will go with me. So... she went with me. I'm like, I don't want to ride the rides because I'm self-diagnosed with vertigo. I just don't like things that spin anymore. It was a lot of fun when I was little, but I'm over it now.
Yeah.
So we went, and like, it was awesome. I'm like a huge Harry Potter fan. I don't know if you know that, but
I just assume my friends are
the founders of Birthday Mischief.
I just assume all my friends are really into it, and if they're not, I'm like, oh, okay then.
Oh my gosh, yeah. As soon as I know that you're a Potterhead, it's on. So I think that when I first entered Diagon Alley, I'm pretty sure that a little sigh and a tear escaped me. I was like,
yeah, I need to take Peo to the Harry Potter experience here in London. It's been one of those things on our to-do list, but again, I can't take Robin because she's too little, and it's not fun.
I would love that.
Yeah. Well, so come on over.
Come hang out. It was actually my goal to come over for Cake International. Is that Cake International? Is that Birmingham, right?
Yeah. It's Cake International, and they have several, but Birmingham NEC, that's the Oscars. That's the big one.
Okay. Yeah. That's my goal to eventually make it there, you know, because there's still so many people that I want to meet, and I want to see everything. There's so much I want to absorb in. So I was on a fast track to get there, you know, as tithing some caking money aside for it. And then this whole thing with my back happened. Well, first my shoulder. I woke up one day and my shoulder was hurting really bad. This started in 2015. And then I went to Austin, and every day I was getting up, I'm like, oh my God, I was working with Icing Images. And I'm like, telling the owner, Debbie, I'm like, my arm is killing me. I don't know what's wrong with it. So eventually got home and everything, got it checked. And they just gave me pain meds, which I don't like. And they're like, you know, do some stretches. Wasn't working. Finally got an MRI. And there was, as far as they could see, they just thought it was a little fatty cyst inside my shoulder. So I was scheduled for surgery this past November. Now you understand, like over a year, like almost 2 years, I'm walking around with this pain. This is crazy. So I had to go under general anesthesia to get this little fatty cyst out that they thought it was. So it turned out to be a tumor.
Oh my
and
God.
It was a lot bigger than they thought because it had hidden itself under my bursa muscle. So the surgery actually took a lot longer for them to get it out, but they got it out. Thank God it was benign. But I've been in physical therapy for my arm ever since, because when you have that kind of surgery, they have to cut through muscle. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're like, when you're healing, you're literally getting on your own nerves. So you're just like, oh, like even if like a piece of material would like touch my arm, I was like, oh. Mm-hmm. From there, I'm using all my money that I'm saving up to go to see everybody in Birmingham because of you know all my stupid injuries.
Oh, that's nice.
Eventually I'll be healthy enough to be able to start saving up again and then get over there and see everybody.
Well, and making all that sweet, sweet cake money, because we're all so well paid.
We're not.
No. Although you were telling me earlier you had an exciting client today. Are you allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, I can, which is really cool because not all the time can we, you know, like sometimes you'll have to sign a form that says that you won't disclose where the party was and you won't post pictures of the cake, or you can, they do all kinds of silly things. Like they'll, in the agreements, it'll say, and I'm talking about a high profile client. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the paperwork will say, you can say that you made a cake for this person, but you can't post pictures, right. Or you can post pictures and not say who you made the cake for. But I got lucky with this one because my clients are super rad here in Vegas. It's one of my top clients on the strip, and they own several nightclubs. So they're just like, you know, they want it to be on social media, and they're like, and we're going to tag you, which is a rare treat. That's really fun when they do that.
Yeah,
so
cool, yeah.
I got to make Ludacris's birthday cake.
Woohoo! That's awesome.
And I know. It was so funny. But I also have a funny story about that. For New Year's Eve, they wanted a big elaborate cake, same nightclub. They wanted a big elaborate cake, and their theme was gold. You know, everything was gold. So I made this gorgeous cake, and I had to get to the strip early, the Las Vegas strip. Now, you probably know because you used to live here, but on New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, they start closing, they start closing the strip down.
You can't just go there.
And what they do is they work from the... Yeah, they work from the inside out. So, you know, like first to get shut down is usually like Flamingo and then Tropicana and then Sahara. So, I mean, like, it's, you know, so I'm like, I have limited time to get there and deliver the cake and get out so that I didn't get stuck on the strip. I get there and obviously everything is super busy. Everybody's running all over the place and I can't find anybody to sign for the cake. So then I send a text to my contact. She's like, just come into the club and I'm right here by the bar. And I'm like, okay, so normally when I deliver, I'm usually in a back hallway. So I got to go in there. When I went in, I didn't see anybody. So I came around and there was another doorway for me to go out. And I'm walking out and I'm holding the cake and I'm like face to face. I almost literally ran right into his face. It was ludicrous. And all I could say was, "Do you want to hold my cake?" I'm like, I couldn't think of anything else to say. You know, like my friends were like, "Why didn't you quote one of his songs? Like, move, get out the way." And I'm like, "Oh, that would have been good." Yeah, I was like, another pink face moment. I'm like, but it was funny because he just looked at me and he went, "Nah." So that was really fun. So I was super excited that they asked me to make his birthday cake. I'm like, sweet, now he'll finally hold one of my cakes.
That is awesome. Well, you're going to post a picture of the cake, so I will link to that in the show notes to your post.
Hopefully I'll be able to start posting some of the pictures of the actual cake tomorrow, but I did share, they did a live on their Facebook of the presentation for his entire party. It was really cool because they had several of the cocktail waitresses holding like ginormous heads, you know, that were his face. And like, and he actually got two cakes, which were both mine. One is actually a fully decorated cake that they can, it's permanent, so that they can, you know, present it when they don't want to do a real cake. But it was really cool. So they had that one out there. And then they had the cake I made for him was a lifelike cigar humidor. Okay. And I don't have all the details yet because I can't be too sure about this, but I've seen two videos. I've seen like the backside of it, which I have posted on my Facebook. And then I saw someone else's Instagram story today. He reaches first. He says, "Oh man, thank you." When they present the cigar humidor to him, he's like, "Oh." And then he goes to reach for it and he says an expletive. So when I saw the video of the front facing, I'm like, you can see it. He's reaching for the cake. So he must have touched it and realized it was a cake and not a real cigar humidor. So I'm like, I'm excited because I actually fooled someone with my cake art, but I also feel bad because we didn't give him real cigars.
I'm sure someone gave him real cigars.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
But still, I'm just like, aw, he must have been so sad.
He wasn't sad. He got an awesome cake.
Still pretty cool, though. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of like reeling on that today. I'm like, I'm so excited.
That is very cool. That is amazing. You showed me a story that it looked like it was first person, so I assume you wrote it, about a cake being delivered through the air.
Oh, yeah. So several years ago, I got a call from one of my really close clients, and they said that they wanted a Lamborghini cake. He says, but it has to be top notch and it has to be all this neat. And I'm like, all right, you know, no problem. And they didn't give me very much notice, which is typical for the nightclubs. My nightclub contacts know that I prefer more notice. We all do. But they know that I can typically come through, you know, with less than 24 hours notice. I don't like to try and make that known to like all the nightclubs, just my really close clients. So I only had 2 dates to make this cake. And I used a Michael McRae little craftsy, whatever he has, his tutorial over there. So he was my inspiration for this cake. So anyway, then they come back and they tell me, they're like, we're going to deliver it from the ceiling, you know, which at the time was typical for them because they had a lot of aerial artists. Then they decided that they were going to helicopter it in. And now that's something I had never done before. So went to the club. I brought several cake boards with me, you know, to see how much weight it could withstand. I wound up actually just using 2 corrugated cake pads. I wrapped it with food safe foil. And then on top of that was fondant, very, very thin coat of fondant, I might add. The helicopter had to be able to carry it and weigh it. So after four hours of testing, they decided that it could only withstand like a total of 17 pounds, which only gave me 11 pounds.
Wow.
So
that is not much cake.
Yeah, we all know you can't make it weigh like that. And I was like, well, how about if we do a styrofoam car? You know, we could probably get it cut. I have a foam guy here that does, you know, like the pillars and stuff that you see inside casinos,
right?
Out of styrofoam. And they were like, no, it has to be real cake. So what wound up happening was, yes, a portion was styrofoam, and most of the front end of the vehicle was rice cereal, and then just the middle part was cake. And there wasn't even any filling in the cake. Like, it was just stacked just so that we could have the body there or whatever.
Right.
So in the end, it worked, but it only, from my understanding, it only hovered at about, I think it was like just at about shoulder height, like of an average person. So they did have people walking around with it. Like the helicopter is up in the air and the cake is on this plateau and it is going through the crowd. It's flying. It's literally flying, you know. But I think now that I think about stuff like that, I'm like, I don't know much about engineering, but I think it would have probably been easier if had they used cables and not actually use a remote control.
Yeah, probably. But
I'm like thinking about it now, yeah. I'm like, you know, they could have probably just attached it, you know, attached the helicopter to some cables and then just, you know, like pulley it across the nightclub.
It may have been at that point easier to get someone from Cirque du Soleil to just hang from the roof.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, yeah. It probably cost less.
Probably.
So... But here's an even funnier story. I didn't notice it. Everything went well. You know, they love the cake and all that stuff, took pictures with it, whatever, and which I'm still not allowed to post to this day of the cake or whatever. But I forgot to put the side mirrors on the cake.
Ooh. Did they even notice?
I'm like, how did no one miss that? Yeah, I'm like, of all the things, I'm like, I said, how did I miss that? I forgot. I'm like, they're still sitting on my workbench when I got home. I'm like, oh my God.
Did your heart sink?
Yeah, it did. I'm like, how did no one notice that?
Because they were at a club and there was a cake flying through the air and there was no pendant in the room to go, but that one doesn't have mirrors on the sides. There was a cake flying through the air. Like, you know, at that point, you're not really looking for the nitpicky details. And we look for the nitpicky details. I mean, that's one of the things I have to remind myself sometimes, that not every cake is going to a cake show where a judge is going to look at it.
Mm-hmm. But it's hard to get that out of your head, too.
It is. You know, because... It is so hard.
Yeah, because you're like, there's going to be someone at that party that is going to make for a baby shower about a month ago. And I also was an invited guest for the baby shower. So I'm sitting there and I'm within earshot. Now, a lot of people didn't know who I was and they didn't know who made the cake. But there's people like actually picking apart my cake. They're like this one gal was like, I can smell everything that is artificial about this cake. I'm just like... Go sit down. And then there's, you know, there's somebody else. They're like, well, it just looks weird. Like, look at it. You know, because you know those silicone molds of the baby, the sleeping baby?
Yep, yep. I have one of those, yeah.
One of those molds to make a topper. Yeah. And
someone gave me one. So.
Okay, so you know how difficult it is to get the baby out without contorting its head.
Well, I haven't actually used it, but I've looked at it and gone, this will be difficult. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so everybody will tell you that when whatever edible medium you put inside this mold, just put the mold inside the freezer for like 15, 20 minutes and it'll be easier to pop out the baby. It's not true. It will. I've never given birth, but I know about how they vacuum babies out. And that's kind of what it looks like when it comes out of that mold. The head is like elongated or the face is all mushed up. After several tries, I'm like, I finally got a fairly close to perfect baby, but his head was still a little wonky, but I just, you know, I covered it up. I made him look like a little elephant. It's cute. But there was still somebody there to notice that his head was weird.
Yeah, well, that's like the online comments. Like, you know, people post really annoying comments about, like I call them the muggles, right? Like the non-cakey people. Like they'll say that there are the inevitable comments of, well, I bet it doesn't taste any good. It's like, what? How do you know that? Just because something's beautiful, it doesn't taste good? Just because you once had a cake that looked good but didn't taste good? I mean, because I guess that's possible. There are probably bakeries out there that don't do it right, but don't assume that. Or the other comment that always comes up, I could never cut and eat that. It's like, yeah, it's what it's for, and we would like you to do that. Please do not say, I'm always like, please don't say you could never eat it because you're kind of hurting my friend's businesses. And then there's this whole sort of category of where people will say this cake art has gone too far or people have too much free time on their hands. I'm like, do you understand that it is an art? It is art. You were talking like no one ever looks at, you know, a fresco on an Italian wall and goes, it's too big. Too many angels. Like, nobody does that. Nobody looks at other art and says, too many paintings. Picasso, too many paintings. Just too many lines.
Yeah, there's just so much.
Yeah, I don't know. Picasso must have had too much free time.
I've never actually made a cake for Carrie Vincent, but I've watched enough challenge shows to have her in my head when I am making cakes. And, like, when I feel like it needs more flowers, I can hear her in my head going, it's too over-decorated. I'm like, okay, Carrie.
Yep.
I listen to my inner Carrie Vincent.
That is a good thing. Yeah. We're not always being judged, and sometimes we have to remember, particularly if you're being paid for this cake, should you be doing things to the level that you're doing, or should you just back off because no one paid you to remake all those flowers? But it is good to have, like, whoever your idols are or whoever's opinion you respect, whether they're a caker or not, in your head to go, now, okay, we're going to stop airbrushing now. That's a good one. Stop. Someone right now listening to this podcast needs to put the airbrush down. Walk away. Clear your head.
Walk away.
Come back it's and so look and go, though, yep.
Sometimes you're like,
Because, you know, airbrushing is one of those things that it's really tempting to keep going. And when you've gone too far, it's too late. So you have to have that voice in your head that sometimes goes, no, put it down. Go look at something else. You know, go check Facebook for 5 minutes. Not for an hour, people. Go back for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. You get 5 minutes. You go look at some cat pictures. Take a deep breath. Come back and go, this is enough. This sunset is red enough. I do not need, if I add more red, the sky is bleeding.
You know what? I actually, I stopped airbrushing. Very rarely do I use my, I have a Grex, which is awesome. The trigger is so cool. So smooth and cool. But because of that, of over-decorating, sometimes I think that airbrushing can make things look muddled.
Yes, it can.
So, yeah, so I don't use it very often unless something has, like, if it's a tall cake that has, like, a sunset theme going from top to bottom, like Clarella from Clarella Cakes, she does a lot, all those silhouette cakes. Mm-hmm. So that's when I'll use the airbrush, is when I'm doing a silhouette cake, but I can't do it for detailing in anything because, like I said, it looks muddled, or sometimes, like, when you've gone too far, then it starts to run. You're like, no!
Yeah, it's okay. And there are some things where the airbrush, it's not always the best choice for actually what you're trying to convey. I mean, it can look, even well done, it can look very 80s, which is what you're going for is very 80s, and that's fine. But it, you know what I mean? Like, it can get that sort of, it looks like it should have moonlighting on in the background. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes airbrushing, it looks the wrong motif.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, I just, this collab cake I just did, which it's not out till long after this podcast. I think it's end of October, but let's just say there were some butterflies on it. So I airbrushed the butterflies, but that's because that was more speed than anything. And just because I wanted a blue to lighter blue gradient. So I made them out of light blue cum paste, and I did a slightly darker blue, you know, to give that sort of gradient on the wings, front and back. And then I hand painted the black edges. Because if I'd airbrushed the black edges, then it wouldn't have had that crispness of that style of butterfly that, you know, like the ones on the tree trunk type thing, that blue with the black edges. That one has a name and I can't remember what it is, but I'm someone out there shouting it, whatever. You all know what I mean. That kind of butterfly. If I had airbrushed, it would have been a lot faster to airbrush the black edges, but it wouldn't have looked as good. So sometimes there are valid uses for it. I mean, you know, stenciling, you know, if that's if you want a sort of an airbrushy stencil look, use that. I just recently discovered that Dinky Doodle has a glitter that's airbrushable.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, a fully edible glitter.
I didn't even know that.
It's a fairly recent product. I reviewed it recently on the blog.
No, around these parts, we call her Professor Dinky Doodle Door.
Professor Dinky Doodle Door.
That's her name. Birthday Mischief Academy, you know, all of our members, they chose personas. I don't know if you've ever checked out our page.
No, I haven't.
It's really, really cool, but we have moving portraits, and her name was Professor Dinky Doodle Door.
That sounds about right. It's Dawn. For those who don't know what we're talking about, Dawn Butler, who I really need to get on the show sometime because she's awesome. And I love her products too. But yeah, so she has, I don't know where you can get it in the States, or if you can. I got it at a cake decorating company here, which I think they ship to the States, but I don't know if you want to pay that shipping. So I don't know. She might be coming.
I wonder if Wayne Steinkoff from Swank Cake Design, I wonder if he has it in his shop.
He might. He will be on the next episode, so I can ask him. I'm interviewing him next week.
Oh, you sounded British for a second there. You said ask.
Did I really? Oh, my God.
You did.
Oh, my God.
I'm on, like, high alert for your accent, so you better watch out.
I'm a full Dick Van Dyking Cheerio governor over here. But But it's people like Don Butler I don't want to offend with like a faux English accent. But anyway, but yeah, so it's a spray-on edible glitter, and it's different. Like, I compared it in my blog post, which I'll link in the show notes, to the pearl spray. Because, you know, we all know pearl spray, but pearl spray is very whiting. Like, it makes things look whiter, which sometimes you want. But sometimes you want sparkle and you don't want to change the color. And so the Dinky Doodle Silver Glitter Airbrush Spray, I cleaned it out of my airbrush just fine. It wasn't any different than any other metallic. You know, you got to clean it properly, but it didn't gum it up or anything. It came out evenly. It was sparkly. It was really hard to get pictures that capture the sparkly because, one, I'm not good at photography, and two, probably, I have a new phone now. Probably actually would have done a better job that. But I made dragon's egg cookies for the premiere of Game of Thrones for my friends. So, cool. And I didn't want to bother icing cookies. I just wanted to make a nice sugar cookie that I know my friends liked. And I wanted, so I just made three colors of dough and I experimented with this glitter spray on it. And it made them like super sparkly. And it took seconds. It was, I mean, compared to like dusting, where then you get like uneven coverage, unless you know what you're doing. Well, I mean, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, this was just done. It was so happy. Cool. I was so happy with this product, which I did by myself, just so we're clear that, you know, no one gave me that one for free. So it was worth, I can't remember what I paid for it, but whatever. It was probably an introductory price or whatever on the on Cake Decorating Company when it first came out. But it's only been out for a while. So yeah, we'll see if we can find a U.S. link for it. But, Dawn might have a link on the Dinky Doodle site for international sales. But I really like it.
A lot of fun stuff over there.
Product-wise, that happens a lot, that I find there's stuff that I prefer from the U.S. and there's stuff that I prefer from here, and I can't... Oh, okay, right now I'm having a problem that I am a longtime supporter of composite mold. I was so happy when they first came out with... They were the first ones out the gate with the remeltable molding equipment. You know what I mean? The composite mold. It was composite mold, and I was so happy.
Oh, okay,
I have a giant vat of it that I moved over here because I made a giant snake out of it for one of the Austin shows, and that took a lot of composite mold. But yeah, so, I mean, I just really like the company and everything else, and so I saw they currently have a Kickstarter, and in fact, I'm going to have to play because they've left me a voicemail about the Kickstarter, but they have what looks really cool. It's now putty-type mold that you push into as opposed to pouring, but it's microwavable and reusable.
Hey Kim, this is Stan from Composite Mold Reusable Mold Making. Thank you so much for having me on. This is a great idea. I'm reaching out to help raise awareness for our Kickstarter product campaign. We're raising funds to help make a food-safe reusable molding putty. The reusable molding putty makes it easy to duplicate objects for the cakes and cupcakes and chocolates, like jewelry and toys and other materials, and you can make them into chocolate and other candies pretty easily just by heating and pressing it onto the pot. Kickstarter is a way for people to purchase the product prior to being available, and it also helps us make the initial batch. So any help in getting the word out would be really, really appreciated. Learn more by going to our website, compositemold.com, or you can go to our facebook.com/compositemold to learn more about the Kickstarter and other things. Thank you so much for your help. Hopefully speak to you soon, Kim.
I saw that, and I'm backing it.
I want to, but it's going to cost me so like a fortune because of not just shipping, but I will get hit with a customs charge.
Oh. So even if you pack it in your suitcase?
Well, so this was the thought.
I think they're launching it. They're hoping to launch it by December.
Right. So here was my thought briefly. I thought, why don't I just order the 1 pound size? Because it was actually, it's a good deal at the 1 pound size because you pay hardly any more for it's like 60 for half a pound and 75 for a full pound. So like that's the good price point there. And then you're getting a nice big block. And I was like, why don't I just order it to Kyla's house? And I thought, what is TSA going to think of the C4 looking stuff in my suitcase?
Yeah, they're going to be like, this is composite.
Yeah, so, I mean, it'll be labeled, and so I'm kind of still tempted to do it, but at $75, I don't want TSA to take it away from me. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you put fun in your suitcase and they take it away from you, it's like, okay, but it's fun. If they take away $75 worth of stuff, that's a lot. Part of it, so that's part of it. I want to help them promo his Kickstarter, because I want his Kickstarter to make I'm like, are you coming to NEC? Will you have stuff that I could buy at NEC? Because I saw him at NEC a couple years ago. I mean, so like, at some point I will get some, because if he doesn't bring some over, then something like the cake decorating company here or someone will import it. But yes, because it's not just the $22 UK shipping fee. When you import products here, if it's a personal item over £39 or commercial goods over £150, but they can decide whether they think it's personal or commercial. And you, so you don't know if they're going to do that until they do it. But if it's over £39 worth, then Royal Mail charges £8. And there's a minimum £8 and change customs fee. So out the gate, you're paying an additional £16 to £17 minimum on top of shipping. So this could all of a sudden be that I'm paying like $125 worth for this stuff. Which, and now that's starting to be like, ooh, I like your company, but that's hard to cost justify. You will get your bag searched by TSA if you put a giant full-size bottle of Americolor Bright White in it. I have learned that.
Well, let me tell you, if you try to smuggle homemade meatballs and sauce from New Jersey back to Las Vegas, they're going to take it.
I bet they would. Yeah.
They took my meatballs. My Aunt Maria made like this big, I'm from Jersey originally, so my little Jersey accent will come out every now and then. But she made this big pot of sauce the day before that we left, and then she packed us meatballs and sauce to take home to my mom, and they took it. I'm like, wow, somebody's having a good lunch.
Yeah, and so you can see why I don't want to necessarily... I mean, I know you put it in your check
bag. What do you think they do with all the stuff that they take from us? Like, does it... do they actually pitch it, or do you think it goes into, like, some auction?
You know what? I wouldn't... I mean, I'm sure the sauce is good, but I wouldn't eat someone else's random sauce, so probably it gets chucked, which is sad, really. It's such waste. I mean, that's
the thing. Well, I can't imagine that the sauce would go into an auction, but...
No. But, like, I've read stories that, you know, there's big bins of nail clippers.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just, it's a massive pile of waste, you know, but you know, if you listen to the last episode, you heard Casey's tale about the passion fruit and the red food coloring.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I try not to put heavy stuff in the bag, particularly coming back anyway. So, like, you know, whatever we get in our Austin goodie bags in terms of fondant, if it's more than one of those, if it's a tiny little satin ice thing, fine, I bring it back. But, you know, the bigger blocks of fondant or whatever, if I won something or whatever, I just, here you go, Kyla. Or, like, because in this pat last year, we got, wasn't there a bag of imperial sugar?
I wasn't there.
I think, I don't, if that was imperial sugar sponsoring or must have been for the tasting or something. So every goodie bag had a bag of, you know, the small bag of sugar, regular granulated sugar. And I get 3 goodie bags if both my kids enter.
Oh, cool.
So, like, you know, and I bring their stuff back to them. You know, I'm like, here you go. These are your Isomalt chips. They end up in my stash because what are my children going to do with random Isomalt chips? But, you know, like, if there's a cutter or a mold or a color, then they are allowed to do whatever they want with that the next time we do cakes or whatever. So, you know, they do get to play with their stuff. But yeah, I didn't bring home 3 bags of granulated sugar in my luggage because why? I can buy sugar here. It's not 1850 anymore. That's not coming in on a slave ship. I can actually just buy sugar.
So what's the other sugar that's often mentioned in recipes from over there?
Caster sugar?
Yes, what is caster sugar?
Okay, so caster sugar is like granulated but finer. So, I've definitely become a convert for it for cakes because you get a much finer crumb.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can measure it by weight because so you can translate a recipe pretty easily. And I mean, it has happened that I've run out of one or the other. And so if you're doing the sugar by weight instead of volume, you can use those equivalently because it's still the same amount of sugar. It's just a different size crystal. If you're doing it by volume, you have a problem because you can't translate that easily. But you can make your own caster sugar. All you do is just put your granulated sugar in a food processor and blitz it.
We do have a sugar over here, and it comes in a half-gallon size carton, and it's just called baker sugar, and it's a lot finer. So whenever I have a recipe that calls for caster sugar, I just use that one.
Oh, I hadn't even seen that on the shelves there. But yeah, that would probably be, yeah.
It's also very difficult to find sometimes. So when I do see it available in my grocery store, I pretty much try to take the lot.
But if that's expensive, honestly, you can just put regular sugar in. When I went back to Austin for 2 months and I was testing a recipe for the blog and it had a caster sugar thing, I just put in by weight, again, the same amount of granulated, to just put it in the thing. Bzz, 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 and it's, it, I mean, you're not grinding it. It's not powdered, right? It's between powdered and granulated.
Your sound effect was awesome.
My sound effects? Bzz, 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 bzz. Yeah. I'm a professional podcaster. Professional.
There you go.
Yeah.
I have built-in sound effects. What?
Are you that guy from Police Academy?
Right, that's you. What was that Murdoch? I don't know. I don't remember. Now I'm gonna have to go find it.
Yeah. Well, so we just showed Peo Spaceballs for the first time a couple months ago, and she didn't understand why there's this guy doing the bleeps, the creeps, and the sweeps. And I'm like, Peo, this is a joke from another movie they have imported into this movie. You have not seen Police Academy, so you have
one of my favorite parts of that movie is so stupid. It's just when he comes out and he's like, "Food you."
back to the sugar thing. Yeah, you can just put it in the thing, and again, if you've gone by weight, your recipe will still taste the same.
You almost sound like my mom. My mom's always telling us, just put the thing in the thing with the thing.
The thing in the thing. The thing of the thing.
The thing! You know, it's, the thing!
Yeah. Normally I have the excuse when I do these that it's like super crazy late at night, but it's only like 10:47 right now. It's just that we're now on the school schedule, so...
Let me flip the script here and ask you a question about Miss Eat the Evidence. Mm-hmm. So I first saw your little invention with your flexible chocolate there. Can you make guitar strings out of it? Have you ever tried?
Well, yeah, because you can pipe it.
The
gummy stuff, because like I have the two sort of like the flexible chocolate kind of came out of the gummy as a mistake, which I won't go into too much because I did in the last episode. But basically, I screwed up trying to make the opaque gummy recipe, and I used evaporated milk instead of sweetened condensed milk, and I was like, this is soup. But then practicing, experimenting out with that came with the flexible chocolate. So gummy, you cannot pipe because it never has a viscous state. Right. If you try to pipe it, it just goes bleh, it just goes all over the place. It makes a puddle, which is why it's great for pouring and making sheets. Not so good for piping or extruding or anything like that. But the chocolate, particularly the darker the chocolate, so because it's got more of the cocoa mass in it, it's a little hard with white. You're kind of going to always get a flat underside. But with a dark chocolate, if you on the flexible chocolate page, I talk about the fresh stuff versus the stuff you've heated and cooled a bit, so you've taken more liquid out of it. If you get the darker stuff, or even a milk, if you've heated and cooled a few times, get it to a point where it's pretty stiff and you can pipe it, it comes out stringy. And like, so for the experimental thing that I did, that I brought to Austin, I made a bunch of strands and I braided them, which to me was cool. Yeah, because like if you extrude fondant or gum paste or even modeling chocolate, if it's soft enough to braid, it's soft enough to munge together.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this then, once that chocolate's set up, you've got individual strings that will not munge together. So it means you can manipulate them and braid them. So yeah, if I was going to do guitar strings, I'd probably do the Mike McCary method of spaghetti airbrushed silver. But if I wanted them to be flexible, Carol Sang, the secretary for the Austin thing, I think she may have done guitar strings with the flexible chocolate. I think she may have. So ask her.
That was her competition piece last year, wasn't it?
Yes. And I think, I'm not 100% sure if she used it for the strings or not. I know she was asking me a lot of questions about the chocolate as she was going into it. But she may have tried doing that. But yeah, it should be theoretically possible. You just pipe it on a large mat, pipe it to the length that you need.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's not always comfortable to pipe because in order to be in its semi-liquid state, it's very warm. It's uncomfortably warm if you have heat intolerant hands.
Piping anything is very difficult for me because I'm not good at it. I know that it's one of my weaknesses, and I actually tell people, I'm like, I don't do buttercream work because I'm too willy-nilly with a piping bag. I'm like, I'm like heavy-handed and just like, if I have to use a mouse, for example, on the computer to edit a photo, like if I'm, taking out the background or something, I always wind up going right across the subject. I'm like, there's no cruise control for my piping.
Yeah, I'm not an expert piper. I want to take Dawn Parrott's course or pressure piping thing, and I know she might run one in London after NEC, and I'm really, really tempted to go and sit because it's Dawn and she won't scare me because she's my friend. You know what I mean? But like, I could never take a Lambeth course.
I've seen her demos. I've never had an opportunity to take one of her classes, but I've seen her demos and I'm like, I don't even know how she does it. Like she's got some mad magic going on. Horrible story. Right after one of her demos, I was complimenting her and my hands are willy-nilly. I totally like karate chopped her string work on her demo piece that she had just did. And I'm like, I was horrified, but she made me feel better because she went to the other side and went, she karate chopped it. I'm like, oh my God. She's like, it's all good. And I'm like, oh my God, I felt so bad.
She is so, so nice. She is so nice that she is the guarantor for my Canadian passport application. But yeah, she is so sweet. And I've got a sound cue for her too. It's,
you
do? Yeah, it is, because she was involved in so many of the early episodes. I mean, she was episode one. I'll put it in here, but it's like an ethereal sort of royal sort of sound. So,
do you, speaking of sound bites, do you watch Man About Cake?
I've watched some of them. I stole his voice for an episode.
he's so hilarious. He's just funny anyway. Like if you do get an opportunity to watch like his YouTube videos or whatever, it's just so funny. But
they're great.
I can't wait to see him in person again because he's been doing this thing on the past few videos where he's doing like a Fazula sound where he's like, bah, 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 bah. He puts his fist up to his face like he's blown into the horn. And then, you know, the editors are so funny because they'll like put in like little, you know, like club lights and like a little, you know, and he's like, bah, 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 you know, like he's at a club. So I'm like, I can't wait to see him just so that we could do that together.
He's one of those people who doesn't know who I am. So I feel kind of bad that I totally stole his voice, but it's all Mallory May's fault. So, because there was we had an episode a few back with Michelle Boyd and Mallory May and Sachiko Winbale, and it was so funny talking to the three of them and their adventures that as a gag, I spent way too much time making a fake movie trailer about them. And there had been this whole story about how Joshua John Russell had saved Mal at the Oklahoma show because she needed a torch to melt the ice malt stick that was holding up her giant cookie. And so it was just so perfect that like in the middle of this, their sort of like their girl buddy flick adventure film, Joshua John Russell was like the hero who saved the day. And I'm like, but then I need his name. And so I need him to say his name. So I went and just like kind of like with no permission, hoping that it's parody and no one will sue me. I just went and stole him saying his own name out of one of his. So I had to watch like 10 of the Man About Cake intros, just the intros, to get the perfect one where he said his name the best. So I'm kind of like, I would love to meet him now, but I'm also afraid to meet him because I'm like, what if he's offended?
Aw, I don't think he would be.
Probably not, but.
He's so funny. He's such a character. He was one of those people that I fawned over, over 10 years ago. And so, and still to this day, I'm like, I can't believe that I'm actually like on a conversation level with this cat. You know, he's just so cool.
Yeah. I want to be on a conversation level with him. That'd be cool. Oh, I'd love to get him on the show too. That'd be cool. But he doesn't know who I am, I'm pretty sure. When he was at the Austin show when I was there last time, and I was on my way to do something else, and I walked past and sort of smiled and waved, and he did that friendly, I'm at a booth, and so I'm smiling at the random stranger smile. And I'm like, yeah, you don't know who I am.
That's actually really difficult. Like, earlier I told you that I'm like a puppy out of the gate when I see people, you know, like, I like to hug people. Like, I have a hug meter, so it has to get really full, you know, for me to feel like, wah! So when you're working at a booth, it's so hard to have to ignore people. It's not on purpose. It's what you're contracted to do, because sometimes, like, you know, whoever is paying you to be in that booth, sometimes they can be very strict about your presence. Like, they want you there because of your popularity and because of your talent, but they don't like when you step out of the booth and hug people or say hi and stuff. So, I mean, that's really difficult, you know. So I know that face that you're talking about, because I bet you he did want to say hi to you and chat and everything, but he couldn't.
Well, also, he just literally does not know who I am. Like, we've never met.
But he probably would like to know who
you are. Oh, that'd be nice. Well, there you go. You broker that.
It's Mitchie out there catching butterflies. La, la, la.
Next time you're talking, you can say, I know someone who stole your voice and she hopes you don't hate her. I mean, but it was complimentary. I mean, we made him the hero. So, like, there's nothing to actually... I'm just paranoid and, like I said, imposter syndrome. I'm like, oh, my God, I hope people don't hate me. Yeah. So I worry. I worry that people get mad at me when they're not. I mean, that's just... Well, we're going back now to the awkward teenager, you know, still inside, who still lives inside my head, who still fears... I mean, I do that even right before a demo. Like, even before a demo with my friends, like, when I would demo at the Austin Cake Club, these are my friends. These are people I work with. These are people I volunteer with. There's literally nothing to fear. I've demoed before them before. There's nothing will go wrong. And even if it did, it would be hilarious. Like, there is literally nothing to be afraid of. And yet 5 minutes before every demo, I'm like, they're going to hate me. Everyone's going to hate me. I'm just going to screw up and everything's going to go wrong. And everyone's going to see how terrible I am. And it's going to be this big scam revealed. And then I do it. And it's fine, and you'd think next time I would learn, but the next time, everyone's going to hate me, everyone's going to think it's terrible. So, yeah, it's every time. So
don't feel that way. That's a poo-poo feeling.
It is a poo-poo feeling. In every episode of this that I put out, I'm like, I'm totally cool right now, because we're chatting, right? And
yeah.
When I'm editing, I know what I'm doing. I have a degree in this for reasons. And I know what I'm doing, and I'm putting together, and I'm working to make a good product. And I know I've got to probably... I'm way fussier with quality, you know, trying to I sit there for hours editing this audio, trying to make sure there's no spikes in anybody's ear or anything like that, and that it, you know, it flows well and all that stuff. And I put it out, and I intellectually know it's a good product. And the moment I upload it to SoundCloud, I spend 5 minutes in utter terror that there's some random screeching noise in there that's going to hurt someone's ears. That is never going to happen. And yet I have that terror every time.
Yeah, but in this episode, it just might happen because it's me.
Yes, but see, that's the thing. I would have calmed down that screech.
Usually when people, like, we get together and we'll get so excited about seeing one another that eventually, like, it just happens. I can manage to elevate your voice to my voice, and then only dolphins can understand us.
Okay, see, now we sound like the things from Galaxy Quest. But, yeah, I mean, I have small children, so I am no stranger to screaming. Robin goes through phases where all she wants to speak in is screams or meows.
Well, the meow one, that's kind of hard to keep up with.
She'll just come in here. Robin, what would you like for dinner? Meow. Okay.
Meow.
Would you like, we have leftover hot dogs or leftover chicken? What would you like? Meow, meow, meow. Okay. I'm going to give you a leftover hot dog unless you pick something. Meow, meow, meow. Okay. You want the leftover chicken. Meow.
At least my phase as a child, my Pee Wee Herman phase was, you know, more understandable. You'll have to ask my mom about that, but maybe we can have my mom call in for you. She'd be like, come down here. It's dinner time. Back me. And she'd be like, get down here. You're going to get it. I swear. And I'm like, I don't know what happened. What am I?
I'm not doing that.
It's a true story. I went through a lot of different phases as a kid. I went through my Mork from Ork phase where I wore rainbow suspenders for a really long time.
I tried to sit
on my head everywhere we went.
I had the board game.
And then I went through my Pee Wee Herman phase. What board game?
There was a Mork and Mindy board game. And somewhere in this house, I still have one of the money in the game was Greebles. And they were little cardboard Greebles. Somewhere in this house, in one of these boxes, I have like one Greeble that I saved from that game because the rest of the game is falling apart because I played it so much just by myself in the basement playing my Mork and Mindy board game. How sad is that?
That's too funny.
But yeah, I worshipped him. Well, he was the example my mother used to use when I, like, you know, I was a lonely, nerdy child. And I have no idea if this is true, but my mother used to always say, well, Robin Williams didn't have friends when he was little, and look at him now. I have no idea if that's true. I don't know if that was based on, like, what was known at that time about his depression, because this was, you know, long before people talked about depression openly. But she's just like, look at him now. And so he was like my hope for I could be somebody someday because Robin Williams was. So, yeah. It's still, I'm going to get all verklempt over here just thinking of him because he just means the world to me. Yeah. Oh, Robin Williams.
Quit it.
Yeah, I know.
Quit being weird. Just kidding.
You first.
You made the conversation go all weird now.
I'm sorry. Okay, we'll go back to Robin Williams being happy and manic, which means we all have to stand up every 5 seconds as we speak. We have to stand up and cross the room just to drive David Letterman up the wall. You're saying you wore your rainbow suspenders and you pulled your Pee Wee Herman? What other? Yeah, I never actually saw that show. I mean, the Pee Wee's Playhouse. It didn't air in Canada.
Playhouse? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not embarrassed to tell you that I own the complete collection.
You know,
that show was great, man. I looked forward to it every Saturday morning. It was just, I don't know. My sisters loved it too. It was just, I don't know, it was silly. I used to like when he would go into his refrigerator and, you know, pick out whatever recipe he was going to make, and then they would just, you know, go back to the refrigerator, and then like all the foods in the inside were having different things going on, you know, like all the bodybuilders were together, which were most of the dairy products. I'll find some clips on YouTube. I'll send them to you.
Okay, cool. I've seen clips of it because he and Weird Al did stuff, and I've seen Weird Al stuff. I made a cake for Weird Al.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, not for pay. He was coming
in like a stalker situation.
Yeah, sort of legitimate stalking. Okay. He was coming to Austin for ACL, Austin City Limits, and we had tickets. I've seen Weird Al in concert more times than I've seen anyone else. That's the kind of nerd that I am. I've seen him in Toronto twice and Austin once, or was it, may have been somewhere else too. Anyway, I really like Weird Al concerts because he does 10 encores in costume. He's amazing. Like, I don't even know how he, I'm not sure he's human. Anyway, he's just so amazing. And you think the concert's over and now he's coming out on a gurney doing like a surgeon. And it's he's just so amazing. And the Austin one, one of the encores was the Star Wars one. He just came out in the whole Star Wars outfit. And then, it was amazing. But I called the venue and I said, look, I'm a cake decorator and you can say no to this, but would it be okay if I brought a cake? I'm not asking to meet him. I am not asking to be creepy, but if I brought a cake to the venue, would it get taken back to him or would it just go straight in the trash? And they said, well, let us talk to his people. And so they called me back about an hour later and they said, no, he said it, you know, they said that you can bring the cake and we'll give it back to him. We can't guarantee he's going to eat it or that you get to meet him. I'm like, no, I'm totally not trying to be creepy. I'm a fan and I do this kind of art and I'd like to bring it cake. And so I made an accordion cake with a little Weird Al holding a sign that said, eat it, because, yeah. I stood in the queue waiting to sort of get into the venue. And then there was like a queue that sort of branched off to the merch table, and I was going to buy T-shirts. Of course I was. And my husband had gone parked the car, and so I'm standing there holding this really heavy cake. And when I got up to there, the woman behind the merch table had sort of been looking at me funny because I am carrying this large white box. And I was like, this sounds weird, but this is... And she goes, is that the cake? Because I made a joke that I was going to eat the cake when it got here, and it made him really sad. So I have to take the cake back to him right now. I'm like, yeah, this is the cake. And he tweeted the cake, so...
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's always awesome, too.
That was awesome. So that's like my most famous cake celebrity story is my Weird Al cake. I have no idea if he did eat it, but you are definitely up the celebrity baking scale much more significantly.
I think that we only have that. I only have that advantage because I live in Las Vegas. So, and Vegas is, I always say that Vegas is a last minute great or bad decision.
Yeah.
So it's like most of the time, like, you know, people don't plan on coming to Vegas. They're like, you know, especially celebrities, they're like, let's go to Vegas. You know, like sometimes it's just not planned. So it's kind of cool because, you know, then you'll get a phone call and you'll be like, hey, I need a cake for such and such. You know, we just found out they're coming in town. It's their birthday or they're Emmy nominated or they're getting a Grammy, you know, stuff like that. So I think that's why I have an advantage on that kind of stuff. We have a few local celebs, you know, like A-list or celebs, B-list. And then we have like athletes, star athletes that are out there that live here in Vegas that I've actually made cakes for. So that's kind of cool too, when I get to make cakes that are outside of the nightclub, because then you're like, that's more of a, like a personal connection, because somebody actually, you know, referred you or they found you, you know, that kind of thing. And they actually, it just feels better. It's mm-hmm. It's a different kind of cake connection. Think about like a lot of the, like, there are so many cakes that I have created that I can never post or tell people that I made a cake for. I can tell you I made a cake for Justin Timberlake, but I can't show you what it was.
That is
so
cool.
I'm like, yeah. I'm
yeah,
like,
but
sucks.
For your portfolio, it's not a great portfolio thing, but it's a great bragging, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, that, I mean, cause that is Las Vegas. That's part of what we loved about living in Las Vegas is, oh, look, Jon Stewart's going to come do, you know, a one night only comedy set. But yeah, that was like the real perk for us living in Las Vegas, because we weren't really gamblers or anything, but it was that if you like a show, it's coming. I've seen Les Mis on Broadway, and I've seen Les Mis several times in Toronto, but then we also got to see Les Mis in Las Vegas because there was the touring show. You know, there are other acts. You know, there was there's a Canadian music act I love, Great Big Sea. They came, they didn't do very many U.S. spots, but they did Las Vegas. Everyone does Las Vegas on their tour. So you get to see and do these things, and if you're getting to make their cakes, that's really awesome.
It is. It's kind of fun. I just said this to Liz and everybody when they were here for Cake Camp. I'm like, I said, singers come here to end their career, I think. Like, it's like, this is it. This is the end of my career. I'm just going to do the Vegas trip and that's it. So that's actually how I ended my comedy career. I was a guest comedian on, what was it? I did Divas of Comedy at the Sahara, which is not the Sahara anymore. And then that was my finish up. And then like prior to that, I was performing at the Debbie Round Loaded. So I'm like, yep, that's the end of my comedy career. I literally brought the house down.
Oh, well, I mean, that's cool that you did comedy, though. I mean, much respect for that, because I was just telling Peo the other day about how female comedians in particular, the bar is set so high because of, you know, all the jerky misogyny in any show business thing, but that, you know, that I'm like, the female comedians are the best because they have to work the hardest, they have to be the funniest, they have to go above and beyond just to prove that they're good at anything. And so I have mad respect for that.
It was tough.
I don't doubt it.
With comedy, I was dared to do an open mic night and I was extremely nervous and I didn't think that I would be able to do it, and I actually succeeded. And then it's much like karaoke. Like after you do it the first time, you're like, okay, what song can I sing next? That's actually how I got into comedy. But it is very difficult for a female. I won't lie about that. I won't sugarcoat about it. It is very tough for a female to have her voice heard.
Which is harder, cake or comedy?
Well, I don't know. I've never actually, I've compared the both in other things, but not like, you know, hardcore compared them or whatever. I will tell you this, the harder side of the cake industry, which is the cake community that can sometimes go against one another, right, reminds me a lot of performing at an open mic night. An open mic night is where you can bounce off your jokes, you know, bounce them off the crowd and get some feedback, decide whether or not you're going to actually use it in one of your, you know, your paid gigs or whatever. But it's also that same room also filled with other comics that are doing the same thing. So they're either listening to your joke and figuring out how they can spin it to make it their own, or they're just putting you down. So it's a tough, both industries are really tough. But I will say on a positive note that being a performer and being a comedian for so long has made it really fun and easy for me to be excited about my craft. And that's why I'm able to work for top brand companies and promote their brands, help them with their social media and go to cake shows and perform demos and teach. I'm really good with crowds and I'm really good with one-on-one. So I don't know how I would answer that question.
Well, I think that was a good answer. Yeah. No, because I can so see that. Yeah.
They are alike. Because you know, you're selling yourself, your talent, to someone who is potentially going to pay, you know, give you a paycheck.
And judging the appearance of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they're both art forms. Yeah, I know our mutual friend Heather has referred to cake as a performance art. I mean, there is a, she's got a whole thing about how the different aspects of the performance and the presentation and it being in the center of the room and the cutting and the ingesting and all that. Yep. It is a performance art.
Absolutely. That's like, you know, that's like going back to last night's cake delivery. You know, it's the birthday boy. He's looking at his cake and he's thinking it's a real cigar humidor. And then he touched it and he's like, no way.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's all performance art. You know, you're like messing with the eyes and I don't know. I like it. I dig it. I've worn a lot of hats in my life because I'm an artist. I always tell people I have an artist brain. We don't job hop. We don't couch surf. We just haven't found our full niche. So that's what happens with my artist brain. I'm just like, this is this one though. I've been wearing this one for a really long time and I love it.
It's fun. I feel honored to get to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm honored that you came on the show.
Oh, well, I am very honored that you said, hey, give me a call. I was like, okay. You know, most people don't give me their phone number because I talk too much.
So. Well, but that is the point here. So you should come back anytime you want.
Reva Alexander Hawk, she was the total phone number blocker. You know, like she would tell people, don't give her your phone number. She's going to keep you on the phone forever. I'm like, hey.
I tell you, well, like, again, that's why these aren't interviews, they're chats, because, you know, interviews, the same question, 5 questions all the time, no one wants to listen to that the 20th time over.
Well, yeah.
But also...
Interviews can get kind of aesthetic, too, you know, you're like, you feel like you're just in that white room, and you're like, can we get some color on these walls?
Yes, yeah, because it's always the same question. How did you get into cake? What is your favorite cake you've ever made? I mean, it's those same, like, you know, sometimes we like to know that, but sometimes I just like chatting with people I like, and I like you, and I'm very happy you've come on and entertained our listeners.
Why, thank you, and I'm using one of my accents.
I'm sure nobody will be offended.
No one. And I've got to remind Sharon's family, hey, Sharon! See, I don't know. I can't do that Australian accent. It's very Ozzy Osbourne.
You know, I was just thinking, you sound like Ozzy Osbourne going, Sharon!
It's just all yelling is what it is to me. I don't know why. My mother is from South Jersey, but for some reason, when I mimic her, I make it sound like she's from the Jewish Bronx. It's not really how she talks. It's just how it comes out.
Clearly, we need a comparison. You need to get Sharon Spradley to call in and say something about you. And we'll put it on the air, and the listeners can compare and contrast.
What can we have her repeat? I love Mickey. She's so much fun. We'll get her to say that.
Okay, yeah. You need to get her to leave me a Facebook voicemail. Many people should call in and say the exact same thing for future episodes. We love Mitchie. She's so much fun.
I'm totally nailing it. I'm nailing it. It's like you're not going to be able to tell the difference between our sound bites. You're going to be like, wow, Mitchie is that good.
Okay, I'm going to pause the interview here because I do indeed have a call-in from Sharon Spradley. Let's compare and contrast and see if you can detect the very small, subtle differences between what she had to say and what Mitchie and I tried to get her to say.
Hi, this is Sharon from Curiosity Cakes. I just want to say I love Mitchie Curran. She is one of my favorite people on the whole entire planet. Mitchie, I love you. If you haven't taken a class from Mitchie, she's an absolute blast. So if you get a chance to meet her in person, make sure you say hello from me. Love you, Mitchie.
Right. So we asked Sharon to say the line, I love Mitchie, she's so much fun. And Sharon, being the amazingly wonderful person that she is, called in that sweet message. Pretty sure this means Sharon wins at everything. And now we'll go back to the interview. It to be a thing now for like the next half dozen shows or dozen shows is random people to call in and say, I love Mitchie, she's so much fun, in like different accents.
so that we can compare them. Yeah.
And then I can call in and try and mimic it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Nothing but dropped calls and Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I edit out the dropped calls, so, you know, the listeners are like, what? What dropped calls? It's like, the magic of podcasting.
But we are all wizards somehow.
We're all wizards. We all, yes, that's what we're not the muggles, we're the wizards.
You know, most of, like, when people ask me, hey, how did you do this and blah, 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 I'm like, magic.
Magic. Well, because again, I grew up magic. With Doug Henning in Canada saying, it's magic. And then it's like, I'm waving my hands through the air and sparkles have to be coming after my hand. It's magic.
Yeah, but that's normal behavior. So, I mean, I do the same thing.
Okay. The two of us do it.
Yeah,
it's normal.
I always have sparkles coming out of my hands. Why don't you?
because disco dust gets everywhere.
Oh, you know, you just reminded me of another funny story before I go. Joshua John Russell once told me that something was wrong with his cell phone and he had to bring it to get repaired. And when they opened it up, disco dust came out.
It was full of glitter.
And I'm like, that's my phone all the time. I'm like, I always have like buttercream or ganache caked up. Sometimes I'm like, oh, please let that be ganache.
Well, I'm in my kitchen right now. My kitchen is now my office. I just gave up life and gave up pretending that I even have any other life outside of my kitchen. And so, I do all this entire podcast, literally my oven. I could reach over here and I'm touching my oven, guys, because like I'm really, there's a desk beside my oven. So, this computer is sitting beside, I have some shelves I'm going to be sorting my tips into. And this is my big box of molds that need to be sorted. And over here are my AmeriColors. Yeah.
I'll have to send you a picture of my color wall. It's the favorite, my most favorite part of my studio. My studio is actually in my house. We didn't mention this earlier, but I was actually one of the pioneers for the Cottage Bill in the state of Nevada. So the Cottage Bill was signed into law on July 1st, 2013.
Cool.
So I was able to get out of the commercial kitchen and I gutted out one of my guest rooms. We got the flooring out of there and put in vinyl. And it's really neat. It's like walking into a little bakery. You know, it just doesn't have the oven in there because this is something that they don't tell you. Apparently, there's only so much like watts and amps you can run to each room in a house.
Yeah.
Who knew? So I found that out after I popped a circuit, whatever, like twice, and the fire department had to come. And so they're like, you can't have this refrigerator in here. And I'm like, well, who knew? Yeah. When there's orange smoke, it's not a good sign.
No, that's never a good sign. Even in Las Vegas, that's not, no.
So the refrigerator's not in there anymore. And apparently running a hot glue gun and a microwave and something else is bad too. So don't do that either. I digress. My favorite part of my studio is my color wall. So I'll send it to you. And maybe it'll inspire you on how to organize your colors.
Oh, cool. So can I put that in the show notes too? Put a picture of your color wall?
Of course.
Cool. All of our entire listenership, which is, I think, crossed 135 people based on the downloads. Woo-hoo!
Well,
yeah.
Debbie Gord, hashtag GordFans, I had posted a video and my color wall was behind me. And she's like, I'm sorry, I didn't pay attention to that video because I couldn't believe how organized all of your color was.
Oh, we have a Debbie Gord sound cue too now.
All hail Queen Debbie!
So,
you have one for her too?
Yeah, because we kept talking about the towels.
I want everyone's sounds in our podcast. I want to hear them all.
Okay, I will make sure that they're all strong. There's a Jackie Kelly one. Hi-ya! Maybe we should make one for you. I don't know. What kind of sound cue do you want?
Probably like a clown one. That's me.
It might be literally just, I may just clip that now. Oh, I should use that to like bleep other people from now on. That is now my official new, someone has used a naughty word I wasn't able to edit out because of context or whatever. That is now the bleep noise. Other than for Jackie Kelly, I use bagpipes to bleep her.
It'll be the Mitchie bleep.
That's the Mitchie bleep. Are you doing that with your actual face? Because that is amazing.
I am. I'm actually, I touch my nose, but I'm, you know, making the sound with my mouth. It's a trick that I learned when I was a professional clown. You didn't hear that. I'll send you a picture of that, too.
I feel like we've barely scratched the surface with you.
I told you I have a very colorful past. We could talk for hours, but my phone's going to die.
Yes, okay. So we should wrap this up, but you need to come back on.
Oh, I would be honored. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and we will talk to you again soon.
Toodaloo, my friend.
Bye-bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.